Most of the people that we interviewed were in the United States illegally. They were considered to be undocumented migrants. I think out of the 21 people that we interviewed, 17 were undocumented. The immigration from Mexico is changing. Most of the people that we see in the United States right now can be considered in transnational migrants. They maintain very close networks with their communities of origin.
That has not been the case in the past, Dr. Santos?
Well, I think to a great extent, some of the people we spoke with had talked about, you know, there's this notion of people coming to the U.S. and sort of remaining here and having very limited ties with their country of origin. But I think with the development of communications, really, and global communications, that's really allowed them to maintain stronger ties to their home country, which has then, I think, increased to a certain point their desire to visit home more often because, you know, there's something there that's constantly, that they know about what's happening, and it kind of keeps them in the loop.
Most of the people that we spoke to, they maintain residence in both countries. They still have homes, family members back in Mexico. They travel as often as they can back to their home country. Their goals are to return to Mexico to establish a small house, business. They still have children, parents, siblings back in Mexico that they have to support.
When you're talking to these folks, is there more an idea among them than there might have been 10 or 20 years ago that they're just here to work for a relatively short time?
Many of the people that we spoke to, their goal is to remain in the United States for a couple of months to a couple of years, 3-4 years on average, and then return back to Mexico. In reality, most of those people stay in the United States for a prolonged period of time, 10, 20 years, sometimes even longer than that.
Dr. Santos, what does it mean as far as there being part of a community here when people believe that they're not going to be here long and they maintain close ties with their hometown and home country?
Many of the people we spoke with, they really did feel that, you know, they were grateful to have the opportunity and to have the jobs and to be able to hopefully build a home in Mexico. But there was also a sense from their part that they weren't really part of the community, that they weren't accepted, that it was easier for those around them to see injustices being committed towards them and to look the other way because, you know, they didn't have that strong bond that they could claim. And, you know, and some of that, we referred to some of that when in our study in the sense that even some of the day laborers that we spoke with, you know, they get picked up in a car and driven to who knows where. And, you know, they talk about, well, you know, they won't pay you after you've worked all day and, you know, you've worked 12 hours for them and then they don't pay you. And, you know, and they'll just throw you out and say, find your ride back and we don't really care kind of thing. And so I think that knowing that these aren't individuals that are legally here and on top of it that are going to remain here allows some people around them to really use them and not feel that there's going to be any consequences to any injustice being committed towards them.
When you're talking about the community, are you talking simply about the overall area in which they're living and maybe particularly the employers? Are you also talking about the immediate neighborhood they might be living in, the larger Hispanic community, for instance?
Many people commented to us that they were particularly fearful of other Hispanics in their community, mainly because they were scared of having INS called on them or because of the competition to find a job, that they would steal jobs from each other. They didn't feel like they had help. And so they have very small groups. They'll have a few people they can rely on, but they are very careful and cautious as to even what they're willing to share even with other Hispanics. And it doesn't matter whether they're from Mexico or, you know, Venezuela. That wasn't the consequence. The problem is the fear that we're all competing, and so that becomes an issue, and it, you know, it raises the stakes, I guess.
Now, Dr. Stodolska, you had talked about what sounded like the difference between expectations and reality. They expect to be here for a few years.
Exactly.
Actually, in most of the cases, the way you describe it, they're here for several years, perhaps indefinitely. Why do you think that happens? Why is there that disconnect between expectation and reality? And if it's not working out the way they think it is, why do people keep on coming in with those expectations?
That's a very good question. There are many reasons for why workers cannot return or are unwilling to return back to their home country after several months or several years. One of them is you know, the rising expectations of themselves and of their families. They need to provide for the upkeep of their children, of their elderly parents, of their spouses, and many of them, they want to invest in housing or in small businesses in Mexico. For example, the prices of building materials go up in Mexico constantly. So while at the beginning they expect to stay in the United States, you know, 2 years, make a certain amount of money and then return and build a house, after 2 years, they may find out that they need to stay, you know, 2 or 3 or 4 years longer to build the same house that they intended. Mm-hmm. Also, the rising expectations of their families, as I said, I mean, it's very easy to get used to this additional income being brought to their families. So a lot of those migrant workers face a lot of pressure from their families. So those are the main reasons that I see.
Well, Dr. Santos, are there immigrants, illegal or otherwise, who just come here for a few years, make the money they need to make, and then get out?
Oh, yeah. I mean, and we did find a few. They were just, as Dr. Stoska mentioned, they were just far in between. There weren't that many. But there are, and I think it was just a lot of the people we interviewed were day workers. They had a variety of skills, but perhaps no concrete definition, no one thing that they could do. And that may, to a certain point, affect that in the sense that because they're constantly waiting for the next paycheck, and so they may go a few days, and many of them told us that they did, they may go a few days without work or even longer. There's never a constant flow of money coming in, and therefore that consequently delays their departure because they have to make this much, and yet it takes them that much longer. And I think perhaps maybe some of the workers that come in that have a very particular trade or skill and are able to hone in and find someone to work for from the moment they get here and have a constant stream of employment, perhaps are able to accomplish their goals, you know. And I mean, and that's a total speculation, but I think based on the people we interviewed, I think there's some accuracy in it. You know, it's just they're able to accumulate what they're looking for faster. Also, they're more involved in the long-term goal, and I think that perhaps detracts them from sort of becoming involved in every other aspect, I guess, of daily life, in the sense of some of the people we interviewed, they're finding that the younger Mexican generation in particular is becoming much more sort of enthralled and fascinated by a commodification and by a very consumeristic American lifestyle. The younger generation in particular was, you know, had a strong interest in what American life had to offer outside of just living here. Just, you know, the American dream, I guess, was something that they were looking for in America, you know, and so they were more likely to talk about remaining here and staying here longer periods of time versus some of the older generation. They really were interested in returning to their home country. They have families, you know, they have children and wives and parents there, and they can't wait to go back and to be with their families and to, but they, as Dr. Sadowska mentioned, the expectations of what they're supposed to bring back with them constantly increase, right? So it's kind of a moving target. They're always sort of looking for something that exactly is changing. And so I think that in itself has a great effect on how much they're involved, on what they want, on how long they stay here, all those things kind of affect it.
Some of the researchers call it the permanent temporariness, meaning that their mindset is that they're going to go back to Mexico after a very short amount period of time, while in reality they stay in this country for a very extended period of time, you know, 10, 20, sometimes even 30 years. What happens is that those temporary stays become permanent, while in reality, you know, in fact, their mindset is that they want to suspend their normal life in the United States because they'll be going back to Mexico in 6 months. In reality, their suspended lives, you know, take for, you know, almost forever.
Now, you're coming at this from leisure studies, mm-hmm. So a lot of what you were looking at must have been as far as what sort of free time and how it was used and who it was used with, and how does it differ for the people that you talk to here as opposed to other migrants?
There were several factors that affected free time activities or leisure behavior among temporary workers. One of them is exceedingly long work hours and very, very demanding work conditions. Many of the people that we spoke to, they did not have a set work hours. They were doing day labors, or they would work through the employment agencies. They would have to be at the door of the agency at 4, 5 a.m., and then they would have to wait you know, 4, 5, 6 hours just to be assigned to jobs. They did not even know if they're going to get job on a given day. The same with day laborers that we interviewed at parking lots in Chicago. They did not have set work hours. There was a chance that they would have a job on a given day, but as well, it was very possible that they would at 12 or at 1 p.m. they would be without a job, so they could not plan for leisure. So exceedingly long work hours, very difficult work conditions. They were incredibly tired at the end of the work day. They mentioned that the only thing that they could really do was to watch TV or rest or, you know, relax at home. They could not plan for leisure. They could not afford leisure. That's another very important aspect. Many of those people, most of them, they remitted large percentage of their income back to their home countries to support their families. They could not spend any amount of money on leisure activities, even on beer, soda, cigarettes, going to movies, going to clubs, paying for recreation resources. They could not afford that.
Dr. Santos, how does that affect this group of people's mix into the larger community? Does it isolate them more?
Well, I think it does. I think it does because, you know, leisure is a huge component of our lives, and it's one of the ways by which we're able to be part of a community by participating in certain activities. And, you know, community obviously broadly defined, not necessarily geographically, but just a community of individuals. And I think that not being able to have access or to participate in leisure activities really restricts it, because that joy of participation, particularly in active sorts of leisure, not passive. Really, the more we looked at it, we realized that really what we were looking at was issues of quality of life within the community, and how not having access to leisure or having very minimal access to leisure and the kinds of leisure activities that we're involved in was having an impact on the quality of life, not only of the migrant workers we interviewed, but also the communities around them, really, that felt that there was that disconnect, and that disconnect becomes visible because of their non-participation.
This phenomenon, do you think it's just a sign of the times? Is just the nature of a changing society and changing technology, which makes it easier to keep ties to your homeland, which really changes the immigration experience?
This is exactly what the theory of transnationalism says, that this is those patterns are caused by the globalization, by the nature of the changing workforce and technological innovations that decrease the distance and make those connections easier to maintain.